National Council of Jewish Women. I'm Mary Harrison, the interviewer today. Gabby Dinman is the note taker, and we are doing Dr. Alan Meltzer, and this is tape two, side one. This is June 8th. Dr. Meltzer, on the last tape, about a month ago, you mentioned that you, in your time in France, that your wife got to know a young woman with a baby, and it turns out that the baby's name was Yo-Yo, and the family's name was Ma. And I just wanted to ask you, have you had any contact with Yo-Yo Ma since?
No. We've heard him play, I mean, at the symphony and here in other cities, but we've never gone to meet him.
Okay. We're going to go over some things that, notes that I took when I transcribed Gabby's interview with you last time. We were talking about voting rights. There were some of the questions that I'm asking you is because we can't presume that the people who are going to be listening to the tape know all the things. The civil rights laws for voting, do you remember what the date was or the time?
64 and 65.
That was President Johnson's?
President Johnson's period,
okay.
Yes.
And at that time, it was then a federal law, and there were no more poll taxes and no more tests that could be given to voters if that was 64.
There could be no arbitrary restrictions on voting under the Civil Rights Act.
And that was under President Johnson.
Right.
I'm going to go over some names with you now. I need Barbara's, your wife's last name.
Marilyn,
excuse me.
Marilyn.
Your daughter Barbara's last name.
No, my sister Barbara.
Sorry. I have sister. I'm sorry about that.
Barbara's my sister, yes.
Okay, her last name.
Barnum, as in the circus, B-A-R-N-U-M.
Okay. And does she, her age?
She's going to have a birthday very soon. She's 68 at the moment.
Okay, and she has children?
She has four children, yes.
And their ages?
Their ages are, now you're pushing me, let's see. The oldest is Carol, who was born in 1946. So she would be 48 this year. And then there was Sandy, who is 2 years younger, so she's 46 this year. Then there's Joshua, who is 42 this year, back in March, and Christopher, who is probably about 40 this year. I mean, maybe 41, but he's somewhere in there.
And where is she living?
She lives in St. Louis.
Okay, St. Louis, Missouri, all right. That is your only sibling?
Yes, I have a stepsister, but who is not related at all by blood.
Okay. She was your father's second marriage.
My father's second marriage was the daughter of a previous marriage.
I think we went through parts of this, but I'm not 100% sure. I'd like to make it clear. In your school years, from your elementary school all the way through high school, even though there was a move in between, did you have any anti-Semitic encounters?
Oh, many. Many. I grew up in part of my life, I grew up in the Dorchester section of Boston, and there were always frictions between Jews and Irish at that time. And the Irish lived in South Boston, and there was an unsteady alliance or an unsteady relation between the Jews and the Irish, and there were many fights between the Jews and the Irish. I fortunately was not involved in too many of the fights, but some. I mean, so that was certainly one experience. Then when we moved to, when my father remarried, we moved to Westwood. That would be about when I was in the sixth grade, so roughly 11, I guess, 12. We were the one of two Jewish families to live in the town. There's now, I think, a big Jewish community in that town. But and the other family, as I recall, had no children, so that we were the only Jewish children in the school. And there was a lot of anti-Semitism, not universal, but many of the people in the town were very unhappy about the fact that we had bought the house, bought a house in that town. It was
How did you become aware of that?
Oh, it wasn't hard. I mean, they would do things. For example, we had a very large lot. This was a new house, and it was a very nice house. General Electric had made it a model kitchen, and I think I may have explained that before.
Yes.
And had a dishwasher and a garbage disposer and all that. It had multiple bathrooms. I mean, it was all very rare in the 1930s. People used to come out to see, just to look at our house, because people that we knew, because it was so new. I mean, people didn't have new houses then. Anyway, at one time we had a big backyard and went up the hill, and it had, we didn't do much with it, left it, part of it natural. It went on fire. And I mean, one example, my next door neighbor stood with his hose at his property line. He wouldn't help us put out the fire. He didn't really care whether our house burned down. He just was protecting his own property. But there were other things, little things. There were people who just didn't want to associate with me, made it perfectly clear. Well, we would have neighbors who were, you know, it was cold in Boston at that time. We used to walk about 2 miles to school. And on a cold winter day, some of my neighbors would stop and they would pick up children, but they would make clear that we were not invited to ride. I mean,
yeah.
So there are lots of ways in which anti-Semitism, none of them, so that they were life-threatening, but there were and there was certainly lots of resentment about the fact that we lived there. And, sure. Great happiness when we moved out.
Anything in the school, teachers? Or?
No, the teachers were fine.
Okay.
I played Jesus in the school play. I was a good student, and I think for the most part, I never felt any sense of that in the school. It was mostly in the families and the children, the neighborhood, and things like that, but not in the schools.
And did your father have many friends?
I played football, for example, a little bit in junior high school. You know, people accepted me in that sense. So it was by no means uniform. I had friends, did all the normal kinds of things that little boys do.
You had Gentile friends?
Yeah, with my friends in that neighborhood.
Did your father socialize at all then in Westwood? I guess not.
No.
What was your father doing at that time?
My father was was at that time a new car dealer. He was he had a new car agency in West Roxbury, which was perhaps 8 or 10 miles away.
Well, what kind of car? Do you remember what kind of car?
Sure. He had been a Cadillac LaSalle dealer.
Okay.
Then when they made LaSalles, and then about 1938 or 39, he switched to being a Pontiac dealer.
Okay.
So he was. Through all that period, it was General Motors.
You mentioned Walter Lippmann on your tape the last time. Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
No. I mean, we're way generationally
yes.
different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was dead before I got to maturity.
Okay. And was.
But I remember reading him in the newspaper. I mean, he used to have Walter Lippmann and Dorothy Thompson were two of the columnists I remember very much from my youth in the Boston Globe. And of course, that was a period of the Hitler. That was the Hitler period. So, foreign policy was, I think, on the minds of most people. Certainly, most literate people, and surely on the minds of Jews. And so of course, there was lots of feeling about what was going on in Europe at that time.
Was there Hillel at Duke University?
I think so, but I didn't have much.
So you didn't observe any of the holidays while you were at school?
No, I started out being quite involved in as a youngster in Jewish activities. I went to Hebrew school and had a private rabbi, and I continued that after my bar mitzvah. I was bar mitzvah, and I continued after my bar mitzvah. And I lost interest somewhere around the age of 15 or 16, which is not atypical, and never had much further interest in religion.
Okay, yeah, one thing that I wanted to mention, you mentioned Henry Wallace running against Roosevelt. Against Truman.
Yes, Truman,
there were.
Dewey.
Could we discuss that there was a third party involved?
Four.
Okay.
There were four. There was the Democrats nominated Truman.
Okay.
In those days, they used to all have their conventions in the same place. So
right.
The Democrats were first nominated Truman. The Republicans nominated Dewey. And the progressives, which split off mainly from the Democrats, the left wing of the Democratic Party, split off and nominated Henry Wallace, who had been old Secretary of Agriculture in the Roosevelt administration, later Secretary of Commerce and then Vice President, in the third Roosevelt administration. And then Roosevelt dropped him to take Truman as his vice president when he knew he was dying, I suppose.
The fourth term.
And in the fourth, because Wallace was very controversial and was not acceptable to the conservative elements in the Democratic Party, and I know more about that from reading the McCullough biography of Truman, about how that actually occurred, than I did until I had read that biography. But in any case, the party brokers didn't like Wallace because he was way too far to the left, and they wanted someone who was more balanced, that is, who would appeal to both a strong northern labor union Catholic sentiment in the party, as well as to the liberals. And Truman was sort of a middle of the road. It came from a border state, Missouri, and so he satisfied the competing constituencies. Anyway, Roosevelt dropped Wallace. So Wallace had remained as Secretary of Commerce through the beginning of the Truman administration, and then dropped out of the cabinet and ran as a progressive, organized the Progressive Party and ran as a progressive. And then, of course, as a result of the 1948 Democratic Convention, the Southerners split off, and they formed what was called the Dixiecrat Party, and Strom Thurmond ran as their presidential candidate. So there were four people running in that race, in addition, of course, to the splinter parties that were always there.
May I ask one question? You said that Henry Wallace was Secretary of Commerce
Under both Roosevelt and Truman.
Oh,
that is, when Roosevelt died, Truman inherited the Roosevelt cabinet.
Okay.
And Truman and Wallace stayed on for some period of time. I don't know what
so
it was.
So he was still in Roosevelt's cabinet, but not
yes,
the vice president.
Oh, yes, that's
president.
Right. He's not a vice president.
Thank you.
Do you have any idea what happened to Henry Wallace?
Yes, he continued on. He remained moderately active after the election, after the 1948 election, and eventually died. He had been a very distinguished agricultural scientist and had run and continued to maintain interest in world agriculture and in world politics, but never with the intensity of a presidential campaign. Never went back to that kind of politics after 48.
I just want to mention, I'd like you to elaborate just for a moment about David McCullough's book on Truman and
yes.
when it was published. And
well, David McCullough's book was published just a few years ago, in 1992, I expect, but it reviews with extraordinary clarity the history of that period.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned that a German rabbi performed your marriage to you
yes.
in Maryland. Was that a Reformed service or a conservative? Or
it was in his study, and then we later had a reception. It was a pretty much private ceremony, and he was, I would think, probably a conservative, not a Reformed rabbi. Not an Orthodox, but not a Reformed. He was conservative.
You mentioned the foundation, Cowles,
C-O-W-L-E-S.
Right.
Yes.
And who was that named after, or is that
It was named after a man named Alfred Cowles, who was a businessman who became interested in why the economy worked the way it was, and got interested in the movement of stock prices and whether stock prices predicted economic activity and things of that kind, and met a great American economist named Irving Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R, who was a professor at Yale. And Fisher, I guess, influenced him into thinking about forming a group to systematically apply mathematics and statistics to economics. That was the beginning of a major revolution in economics. I mean, they were not the only ones who were doing that. Some of that work had been going on well, for a long time. Fisher himself had done a lot of statistical work in economics, but the systematic treatment of problems in economics and thinking about them is different from the problems which would arise, say, in a field like biology. That was very new. The difference is, let me explain what one of those differences are. But in biology, you can do experiments. You put a classical experiment is you have a field of corn and you put some fertilizer here and no fertilizer there, and you water them all the same and you see which ones grow better, and you find out what the effect of fertilizer on crops will be. And so you can really run a controlled experiment. It's difficult to run controlled experiments in economics and in many other areas. For example, it's difficult to run controlled experiments on the weather, and it's difficult to run controlled experiments on the human body. Right? Much you can do it, but still with some difficulty. And the reason is that there are many interacting parts in the economy. So you change this thing, and you can't be certain. It's not like putting fertilizer on the field and controlling the two doses or the dosage and observing what the difference is. You have all these interacting effects as part of a system. There was no statistical theory for the movement of systems. And one of the things that is identified with Coles and the Coles Commission, and later called the Coles Foundation, was the development of econometrics, something called econometrics, as a branch of economics, and now used by people in sociology, political science, and even in the non-social sciences. It's the study of large-scale systems, how to do statistical testing of effects, causes and effects, in large-scale systems with many interacting parts. So Coles was very active in bringing that development forward. And now no one would call himself an economist who hadn't studied great good amount of econometrics and understood the operation of systemic changes and how systemic influences work. You see, if you have a big system, it's easy to take out one little piece of it and look at it and think that this caused that to happen. But it may be that there's a third thing which you haven't looked at all, which is causing them both to move. And it's that third thing that you want to be sure that you have all these influences as best you can. You want to have all these influences put together.
And what year are we talking about?
Coles began, the Coles Commission began in about 1933, or Coles began his interest in economics in 1933. And somewhere in the middle 30s, the Coles Commission was established at the University of Chicago and brought together many of the people who have subsequently won Nobel Prizes in economics, including my colleague Herbert Simon, who was there for a brief period of time, and many other people.
Do you remember other names besides?
Oh, yes, sure. There was a man named Charling Koopmans, T-J-A-L-L-I-N-G, K-O-O-P-M-A-N-S, who was instrumental in moving the Coles Commission to Yale and becoming the Coles Foundation. He was there. Think about some of the other people there. A man named Havelmo, H-A-A-V-E-L-M-O, who also won, I mean, all these people are people who won the Nobel Prize in economics. Lawrence Klein was there, K-L-E-I-N. He also was a winner of the Nobel Prize. I mean, there are many others who became quite famous in economics, even though they may not have won the Nobel Prize. Yasha Marshak, M-A-R-S-C-H-A-K, was there. Many others, including and for a brief time, that's how it got into our tape, my co-author, friend, teacher, Carl Brunner, who was at the Coles Commission in 1950-51.
I'm asking you a question that I think you've already answered. How observant has your house been? How observant have you been with your family, your children?
Well, we're Jewish. I mean, we recognize Judaism as our religion. We don't do very much to practice it. I gave my children their choice as to whether they wanted a bar mitzvah or not. One chose to do that. The other two chose not to do it.
Where?
So in that sense, we're here in Pittsburgh.
In what synagogue?
Yes, in the Reconstructionist synagogue that met at the Hebrew Institute. And I can't remember its name. It may come to me.
And they were located right in the Hebrew Institute?
Yeah, right. They used to meet at
Darlington Road, or?
No, the one where the school is. They used to meet in the school, the basement of the Hebrew school. Of the,
so
of
that's
the Hebrew school just off
Forbes
of,
Avenue?
And right, on the corner. No, it's on, yeah, it's on Forbes in the corner of
Bennington.
Is it Bennington? Yeah.
Okay. So is that the synagogue that does not have a rabbi?
They did not have a rabbi then. They had
okay.
a congregational. It was led by its members.
Okay. Do you know any more about that?
Not much more. I mean, after my son was bar mitzvah, we did not get, we attended during the period of before his bar mitzvah. He had his bar mitzvah, and then.
Any particular reason for choosing that place for the bar mitzvah?
Friends. I mean, the usual reason. We had friends who were members of that congregation.
So you do not belong to an organization
no.
to a no. synagogue now.
Now, my children have gone different ways. I mean, it's interesting because I have friends, of course, who felt it was very important to have their children. I would say, just from my casual observations, no more than that, that the number of my children who then became practicing Jews is perhaps about the same as theirs. I mean, it didn't seem to have any major difference in effect, so there must be other outside influences working on them. I have one son, the one in Boston, who is a member of a congregation.
His name?
His name is Bruce, and he and his children go to Saturday services, the children's services. He takes children to children's services. My other two children...
Is that a Reformed?
It's a conservative congregation. In fact, it is, it's strangely enough, is in part the outgrowth of the congregation in which I had my bar mitzvah. I mean, because they amalgamated after that and moved as the city changed, and the area that was previously an all-Jewish neighborhood became a black neighborhood. And so the congregation moved, and he happened to join a congregation because his friends were there.
And the name of the congregation?
I don't remember the name of the congregation, but it's not the same as the name that it had when I was there. But they have a little plaque in there which explains how it's related to that, and it turned out that it was related to the...
Do you think you had something to do with it?
No, nothing to do. I mean, with his joining that? No, his friends... I was surprised when he joined.
No, but when you found out where he joined, did he have any idea?
Oh, I was surprised. No, he had no idea. He knew, of course, that I had grown up in Boston, and had asked me what synagogue I had gone to, and I told him, and he said, well, that was the one that he had joined was part of, was an outgrowth of that congregation.
And your other?
My other two children did not marry Jews, and they don't practice any religion at all. Their children don't attend, as yet, do not attend any church, synagogue, and my sister, to complete the matter, married a Methodist, and they became Unitarians. And all of her children, to the extent that they have any religion, are Unitarians.
May I ask, is Bruce the one who had his bar mitzvah?
Yes, Bruce the one who had his bar mitzvah. Right. Although I don't think that was the influence. I think the influence was his experience. He went to Shadyside, and he felt he ran into some anti-Semitism at Shadyside Academy. And when he was there, he went to Shadyside for from the 10th grade through high school. And he ran into a considerable amount of anti-Semitism there, and I think that probably had more influence on his decision that his children should have some experience with Judaism and some idea about what Judaism is.
Could you elaborate on that, or do you know any of the details?
Not a great deal.
Okay.
I know that there was nothing physical, but I mean there was a sense of resentment. I mean, people would say, well, he's a Jew, and that is, in this meaning, don't associate with him. I mean, there must be something wrong or unclean about that.
So were his friends mostly Jewish?
At the time that he was at Shadyside, there weren't a lot of Jews at Shadyside. I mean, there were a few. Now, of course, there are a great many. When he went, that would be, let's see, Bruce was born in 55, so he graduated in 72. So he would be there in 1970, 71, 69, 70, 70, 71, 72.
There was still a quota at that time.
There may have been. Anyway, So there weren't very many Jews at Shadyside at that time, and most of his friends were not Jewish.
And when he made, he's the one that just, as you gave all of your children a choice, he's the one decided he wanted to be bar mitzvah.
Right.
Do you have any idea what influenced that, or?
No.
Okay. Your father, when he remarried, were there any religious observances, in California? Or?
No, he was remarried in Boston.
No, when they moved, excuse me.
When they moved. No, I don't think my father, to the best of my knowledge, even in his late years, had much religious connection.
If you don't mind my asking, did your grandmother live long enough? I want to also ask.
My grandmother died in 46.
So she wasn't old enough, didn't live long enough to see the progression of moving away.
No, I was just in college.
Okay.
And my sister was had just finished college, and was just finishing college when my grandmother died.
So things hadn't progressed enough for you to have an observation that she might have made, or comments about moving
religion.
Away. Yeah.
Yeah, she was a very, observed all the Jewish laws, but I don't think she put great stock in it. That is, she did it because that was the thing to do. But I don't think, unlike her husband, her second husband, who was a very strong believer and the pillar of his synagogue, my grandmother did it, I think, out of ritual observance. I never had any sense that there was great conviction. I may do her a disservice, but that's the impression I had.
Your mother was the secretary of the president of the B&O Railroad. Do you remember his name?
No. I mean, this is before I was born.
I was just curious. Maybe she talked about it, or...
Remember that she died when I was not quite six.
Okay.
So that if she talked about it, it didn't register with me. And she probably wouldn't have talked to me about something like that.
I'm not surprised your answer, but I felt the president of the Boston B&O, Baltimore, Ohio, I felt that I should know. Okay, I'd like to just get some dates now. Your father, full name, birth, death date.
Sure. My father was George Meltzer, and he was born in Boston on March 21st, 1899, and he died in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, in November of 1966.
Your stepmother?
My stepmother is Edith, original married name, maiden name was Charlotte, Shalit, and she was born in June 1908, and she's still alive, lives in St. Petersburg.
Amazing. Your mother?
My mother was Minerva Simons, S-I-M-O-N-S, and she was born in Birmingham, England, and I have to tell you a story about that. I mean, I'm not really sure how old she was. I mean, there's various speculation about it. The best story that I ever got was when my father met my mother on a trip. They were both taking a vacation. My mother said to my father, my father asked my mother, "How old are you?" And she said, "How old are you?" And he said, "I'm whatever age he was at the time," and she said, "Well, that's how old I am too." So she probably was older than he was, and the family history suggests that that's probably true, but I'm not sure how accurate it is. So she was born somewhere in from 1895 to 1898, but I don't know exactly when. In March, she claimed, and she died in 1934, in January of 1934.
Your grandmother, you mentioned?
Yes, Celia.
And your honor is a duke.
Yes.
Could you?
That's going way back. I was a Phi Beta Kappa, and I don't know of any other honors. I mean, I had a good grade average and all that, but I don't remember any other particular honors. There may have been some.
You mentioned Mary Price of the Southern Conference of Human Rights. Was that in North Carolina?
Yes, that was in North Carolina.
That was my, anything significant that you feel we should know about her?
Well, that's how Walter Lippmann got into this conversation, right? Because she had worked for Walter Lippmann.
Okay.
I wondered how we got to Walter Lippmann.
Yeah.
That's right.
You mentioned Julius Scales.
Yeah, Julius Scales. Right.
Okay, and he was the...
Junius.
Junius, with an N.
With an N, yes.
Okay, with an L. Sorry.
S-C-A-L.
Yes, just the way you spell Scales.
I'll have to change that for my notes. And he was... Was he governor of North Carolina?
No.
He was
his
running.
His grandfather had been.
His grandfather. Okay.
His grandfather.